This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 15th of February, 1954. The title of this lecture is Introduction to the Fourth American ACC. This lecture is 56 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
And this is February 15th, 1954, first lecture, fourth unit. As I stand here and look at your haggard faces, I wonder why I ever let myself in for this. I don't mean that to be complimentary. But I decided that if we were to knock out all the resistive fives who applied, we would probably knock out 90% of Scientology, so we might as well just take it the hard way. And we have a thetan extractor now that's built on the principle of an oil well, derrick, and so forth. And it's used as a balanced drill principle, and it only goes down 5 miles, but I understand that we can drop a few more sections on it. So if some of you are that thoroughly interiorized, why, perhaps still there's hope. Now, by the way, I didn't mean that to be complimentary either. Now, nearly everyone starts in Scientology by labeling his case, particularly since SOP 8 appeared and had these various case levels, so an auditor would know where to start processing and why. And so everybody labeled his case at that level that he thought he majored up to. Similarly, when the first tone scale came out up there, everybody walked across the tone scale well above 2 and found out where he was on the tone scale. Well, that's all very well, but if we don't vary somebody on the tone scale, if we don't vary somebody's case level once in a while, we aren't doing anything. So a lot of people, by the way, have of recent years, the last year here, have been labeling themselves fives and so forth, and then they go on getting processing. They go on getting more and more processing, you know, they go on labeling themselves five, and a new auditor comes along, processes them a little bit, and he knows Joe. He's perfectly well aware of the fact that Joe is a five, and he goes on processing them on five techniques, and the months go by, and time goes by, and so forth, and he's still processing them on five techniques. Then some auditor gets real smart someday and says, be 3 feet back of your head, and the fellow is. He's been a 2, and then a 1, and so forth, and he never quite noticed this. Well, I'll give you an example of that. We had such a case here in the last unit. He was in an excellent stage of occlusion, and it was all black. Where it wasn't black, it was blacker. We had, by the way, in the last unit here, we had to lower the classification of cases. You know, with SOP 8, we had the extremis was what wall, and with the last unit, we had to develop a lower level. It's what fog, and that's lower than what wall. Anyway, this case was a what fog case, and he was all black, it's all black, it's all black, you know. And sitting along, happily doing mock-ups, which he had an idea of, and running things of which he thought someday he might be certain of if he wasn't uncertain of them. You know, one of those snap cases. But he hadn't been moving on processes, mostly because he hadn't been getting much processing. And it was very, very peculiar, extremely peculiar, that he exteriorized rather easily. He didn't find this out until one day, as a class demonstration, I said, be 3 feet back of your head, put your hands on your shoulders and steady yourself there. Now put a sphere of blackness around yourself, another sphere, and look through the first sphere at the second sphere. And all of a sudden, he broke into a big laugh. And he instantly started to line charge, because he had to go outside of the last sphere of blackness he put on to make sure he had put one there. In other words, he had to exteriorize from the blackness to make sure that there was blackness there. This is real cute, isn't it? So, anyway, that's the way it goes. Now, some cases don't think they're coming along well at all, and they stumble along and fumble along, and they just think they're just doing terribly and so forth, and they started in dead black, and they're getting mock-ups now and so forth, but their cases aren't moving along. And then they're getting a pretty good three-dimension in their mock-ups, but the cases aren't moving well and nothing's happening on their cases. And then they're getting out, but they're not getting out with much certainty, and so nothing's happening on their case. Then they're getting out, but they're not yet able to make a noise while they're outside, so nothing yet's happening to their case. This is just rather routine. That's because we're still going on the basis of negative gain. You are unlearning. Unlearning. You're not here to learn a thing. You're here to get up to a point where you know you didn't have to know all that. Now, we restore enough knowingness, in other words, so that you don't have to study to know. That's the ideal way to learn, isn't it? Because you basically know most of this. Basically, you know most of this if you let yourself know it. But there's a couple of things you never did know, and one of them notably is that you really couldn't be trapped, and you never knew that for sure. And so there is a datum to learn, but that, again, one learns by experience. All right, what are the immediate instruction goals of this unit? Those are very simply summed up. They are operation goals. The instruction goals are operation goals. The theory today is the practice. You take the theory and you audit with the theory. You don't take the theory and then figure out a process. You see, you just take the theory and you audit straight with the theory. Give you some sort of an idea of this. We'll take the no down to sex scale. There's a scale of case entrance that goes like that. And the theory is that a case becomes more and more compact, more and more solidified, harder and harder to exteriorize. And as they go that, they get down the scale. All right, we just take that scale and then we process it with some certainty on these things. Give you the most certain fact you have about sex. That's a process. Most certain fact you have about eating. What's the most certain you are about thinking or about symbols and so forth? You can actually take that, and it's a rather remarkably fast process. It peels a fellow back pretty well. Now, when we get into communication, if you practice the theory of communication, C to E, and the distance between, why, a case simply unravels rather rapidly. Why? Because the case sees immediately what he's trying to do. He will tell you all the conclusions. The guy, by the process, tells you the conclusions about life. Well, that is the ideal way to process. We start processing somebody on gravity, exteriorization, interiorization in the masses. And we just do this, and that's all we do. And what do we get as we do this? We get his sudden recognition of the fact, and he points it out to you. You don't point it out to him, that gravity is solely a consideration. That's all. That's what gravity is, a consideration. Okay. That's good processing. Why? Because it enhances the preclear's knowingness. Right? Well, for the first 3 weeks of this unit, I'm not going to burden your knowingness any by giving you a bunch of evaluation material. To a large degree, in group terms, I am going to process you. Lots of group processing. Now, why do you say group processing instead of individual processing? Well, the very funny part of it is that group processes today administered and monitored by a guy who knows what he's doing, are in lots of ways even faster than individual processing. Of course, if you took a tape of one of these group processes, which I will be giving you here in the next 2-3 weeks, and if you took one of the rougher tapes and you sent it out to Keokuk or somewhere and played it to a group without a good, well-trained emergency auditor standing by, you'd probably have a picnic on your hands, a real picnic. These processes are not particularly light these days. They are tough. They are very tough on the preclear. Well, now we have the major aberration of the preclear, of course, is he has chosen as his enemy space and energy. Anytime a fellow starts fighting space and energy, he's going to have a good time. So it's really going to have a real good time. He's going to back right straight out of the universe and then back in reverse. I don't know quite how you back in reverse, but people manage it. They get all the way to the bottom and then they go down further. They back all the way out of the universe and then they invert in some fashion which pins them back out of the universe into it. Only life could do this. I mean, nothing mechanical could ever do what a Thetan does. Well, the individual goals could be very, very briefly stated. We want, as the end of this unit, we're not looking for, quote, interiorization. We're not looking for a bunch of fakir tricks from you. Nothing like that. Everybody comes along, they ask you, why can't you lie down as a Thetan on a bed of spikes or something? I mean, it's very, very fantastic that they, in the Western world, have never differentiated between being a man of wisdom and a fakir. But they do have the name in the Western world, faker, and it comes from the word fakir. And we're not interested in you being able to go to dinner parties and move ashtrays across the table, much to the astonishment of the guests. We're not interested in fixing you up so that you can sit down at a piano and have it throw itself at the audience. When you sit down to play, we want you to play a piano. Just like it says in the ads. All right. Very specific goals, then, would we have? Well, we can have a lot of highly classified goals. We can say Theta Clear. Yeah. We could say Operating Thetan. Yeah. We could say Release. Sure. We could say Plain Clear. Yeah. And so forth. All of these things would be interesting goals. But let's be a lot more specific than that. Let's see if we can't get you up to a point of being able to achieve an unlimited serenity and to excellently and easily grant beingness. That's a nice goal. Not a very tough goal. Probably won't any more than kill you to get there. But if we tighten our goal down to this point, we have actually embraced many, many goals. Because you can't be unlimitedly serene in your head. Try it sometime. You can, however, and strangely and fantastically enough, grant a lot of beingness while it's still interiorized. But you go up to a certain point with it, and it'll backfire. It'll practically burn the body down. So these things do require some exteriorization and work in that character. But that doesn't mean that you just won't go any place until you exteriorize. This is not true either. You're actually not in anything. I don't know why we're worried about getting you out of anything. There's another method of exteriorization entirely, is you just make a guy practice unmocking things until he can make things disappear at will, to his own sight only. You know, he can look at a chair with his messed eyes wide open and no chair, or selectively, top of the chair gone, bottom of the chair gone, half of the table gone, and so forth. Rather easy to do. Well, you can practice on somebody selectively to a point where he can unmock his small toe and Unmalkey's right foot and so forth, and finally Unmalkey's body. You've got an exteriorized condition when you do this. You have him at last 3 feet above the seat of an empty chair. What's he doing there? That's very easy then for him to be 3 feet above the empty seat of the sofa. Well, this is exteriorization by unmalking. We're not too worried or frantic right now about exteriorization for the good reason that all will come about in due course. As I look across your bright, smiling faces, I see that we have three people in this unit, this group four, who exteriorize easily. And I don't mean to tell you that you're visible. I just look at some of the others and I say, oh, no, it can't be. Now, so much for that. Do we just see if we can't get a state of unlimited serenity, and it possibly doesn't look like much of a goal to you, you know, to be serene in the face of everything. But sounds more like an Eastern goal than anything else. Well, the Easterns have never been able to attain it. It's an Eastern goal, maybe. And the other one is to be able to grant beingness excellently. If you can do these things, and studying around, I found fellows in pretty good shape. He's in as bad shape as he can't do these things. That's a practical processing goal. Now, we have a type of group processing which we were experimenting with a little bit and which seemed to work out pretty well. This was no effort to feed anybody a tape. It was for no lack of auditors to group process people. But it took all the automaticity out of the process. If the same hour of process as a group was hit two more times. See that? It's exactly the same. In other words, I couldn't stand up here and give you an exact duplicate of the process. And you find out that when this is done, it not only finishes off whatever the fellow was started into on, as an automaticity, but it runs out the session too. which is quite amusing. Because the process, the group process, are monitored against the unit and what the unit needs. Only a few of these group processes you could call standard or something that you would like to take out into the sticks and play for the people, you know, as an auditor or something of the sort. This group processing has to be pretty carefully monitored if it's being done very, very well. And you'll find out about this. I don't know why it is on these earlier units. Somebody group processes, with all due respect to the people present. Somebody processes the group, and they get along all right. And the first 3-4 weeks, certainly, they were processing each other, co-auditing in all the first three sessions. They got along all right, and the cases stayed right there, same level. I think the third unit people will tell you this is the case. I group process them. For some reason, not any cases can come up along the line. Well, I guess it's their postulate that I'm the one that grants beingness around here. The only way I can account for it, because, of course, the auditing is no better than you could give. Anyway, we have this, then, until we get a better idea. We'll repeat any group process at least once. Any group process you get, we'll repeat at least once, just to clean it as a session. This is an interesting gag. This is a gimmick. Seems to work rather well. And we may do it twice. All right. I found out that nearly everybody who comes to one of these units may have had earlier training and may have had this, may have had that. But it reminds me of the good old days when an airplane pilot was considered half buzzard and half devil, and there was still some romance in the air, you know, back there in the late 20s, early 30s. Of the old-timers who had learned how to fly on an Eagle Rock or a Waco 10, something like that. And these old boys had sort of jumped in one day when it was sitting there and found out how to start it and taxied it around a few times and then took it up and set it down again a few times and learned how to fly. Well, about the time they started to make transport pilots out of these people, you know, and put them on airlines, why, they found out they had some of the oddest and strange tricks. One of them would consistently fly with his left wing slightly low. That was the way the seat of his pants balanced. Nobody'd ever called it to his attention. Another one would habitually slip in his turns. And another one just couldn't resist taking off with his tail pointed perpendicularly at the ground, whether his motor was missing or not. These boys, in other words, had some slight peculiarities about their flying, and they had to be retrained. Similarly, this has taken place with people in Dianetics and Scientology. They look at this stuff and it says MEST. Okay, they know what MEST is. And they go on their way. Well, what's MEST? And, gee, that's real good. What is MEST? And that's easy. That's matter, energy, space, and time. Well, that's fine. Now, what are the definitions of the component parts of matter, energy, space, and time? Well, matter, that's easy. That's just solid stuff. And space, well, that's space. It's space, you know. And energy, well, that's electricity and stuff like that. Now, we didn't ask for an example. We asked you specifically what energy was. And time, well, time, well, you carry a watch, don't you? This doesn't process any preclairs. The fellow has just kind of neglected those other things because he knew the word MEST very well, and he knew what the physical universe around him. And he's been going along fine. He's been getting good results on the pre-clears and so forth till he found one stuck on the time track, and then he couldn't immediately unstick him. Well, he should be able to unstick him by definition. Just by definition. If he knew the definition, he could unstick him. That's all. So he doesn't know the definition. What's the definition? The fellow's stuck in time. Therefore, you have to have the definition of time or stick. All right. To unstick him. Simple, isn't it? You've got to have the definition of time. All right, now let's take space. We can look at people around, and they say, you know, I don't get much of a visio, and when I do, it's flat. That's fine. What's the matter with him? Flat visio. No three-dimension of the visio. Two things wrong with him. He's too late on the cycle of the MEST universe. That's one thing that's wrong with him. He's over toward destruction instead of back toward creation. It's three-dimensional creation. Next, he is playing the trick of predict. He's got to predict everything. He can't let anything predict itself. He's granting non-prediction to everything, which collapses it. You see, the future won't be there unless it's made and so forth. More important than that, he's short on space. Well, if he's short on space, what do we do? Well, we better give him some space. Well, that's fine. How do you give a guy some space? Well, you can say, just mark up some space, and so forth, and you get along very fine up to a certain point, and then you find that there's something happens to the space that's uncontrollable, and it gets to be a very foggy mess. Well, the trouble with it is the definition of space is viewpoint of dimension. That is the definition of space which we are using, and it is a definition of space. Quite a marked advance over physics, by the way. Unless you were a physicist, you wouldn't really appreciate the fact the physicist doesn't have any definition for space. He said a long time ago, it's up to psychology to define space. Psychologists didn't know this, amongst the other things they didn't know, and so they never bothered to define space. Well, they could have looked it up in the Encyclopedia Britannica of 1898 or 1910 or something. And there's a long article in there on space and time, and it says very specifically that it's up to the psychologist to define space. So he hasn't been on the job, so we had to push him off the time track and take over. Anyway, 19th century psychotherapy, such as psychology, psychiatry, and so forth, had to be replaced by a 20th century psychotherapy, which, of course, the first of that, I think you will agree, was Dianetics. And we got into Dianetics and found out that there was a lot more unknown that had to be known before we could make a good, sharp, concise package out of it. And the first thing that had to be known, really, was right there. The psychologist had neglected back in the 19th century, and William James, he neglected his job. And his job was to define space and time. He hadn't done it. So the physicist sits around, and he says, well, space is. Now, that's just a great definition. That is, you can work with it like mad. Space is a viewpoint of dimension. The physicist can work with this. Anybody can work with this. If you do not have dimension, you don't have space. Dimension is usually represented by anchor points. You're going to have a lot of preclears that will exteriorize simply because you have made him remedy his scarcity of anchor points. Because the body is hung together on the electronic structure of anchor points, and this in itself makes the space which contains the body. And these anchor points get out of location, and then a fellow can't exteriorize. That's rather routine. So we remedy that, and we have space. And now he's got some space to get out of. Before that, he didn't have any space to get out of, and so he couldn't get out of it because there wasn't any space there to get out of. So we asked this fellow who he is and where he is and where he's located, and he says, I don't know. He doesn't know if he's in his head or not in his head. Well, why doesn't he know? Well, there's no space to be in there. There's not even the space of solid matter to be in. The space is missing. Why is it missing? Because the electronic structure of the body has collapsed. And every time this individual tries to mock something up or do something, the electronic structure, in trying to straighten itself out, causes so many pieces of strange, distorted space and so forth that it'll snap back into its former position any time you try to adjust it. Well, we get our problem then, the occluded case. The occluded case is fighting all the time. Space. Space is mysterious stuff. It's got horrible things in it. The messed universe consists of black space. And so he's had space as his enemy for so long that he's stuck in black space. And we've got to give him some space that he knows something about before he can go anyplace. He doesn't have any place to go unless he has space. Now, many a fellow sitting there with his eyes wide open looking at the room knows there is a certain distance between himself and the front of the room. He knows this. He looks at it with his messed eyes. He could throw a ball. He could watch the ball travel that distance, so forth. Ask him to close his eyes and ask him for sure if he knows there's any space between himself and the front of the room. And if he's having any difficulty in exteriorizing, that's one fact. He's not certain of immediately. He has to figure this for a long time before he really knows whether there's any space in front of him or not. You solve that difficulty, you solve the difficulty of space, in other words, as a viewpoint of dimension, by resolving the dimension points, the anchor points. If the guy can have anchor points, he can have space. So this is a good workable definition. So we get into definitions as they are, and they are very, very, very precise in Scientology today. Space is a viewpoint of dimension. Time is the co-action or co-hyphen motion of particles. As far as matter is concerned, matter is condensed space rather than condensed energy. We're not sure that the energy is there, you see. Now, an energy is a highly condensed space or impulse. And you mass it up enough and you get something solid. So pay attention to definitions and we'll know where we're going. So we're going to cover definitions very early instead of a heck of a lot of wandering theory. I could stand up here and give you processes which are very interesting and very workable, and you could do them by rote and you would get results. But this is not what I am trying to train. I'm trying to train some people who have sufficient understanding of the business of living, of livingness itself, so that they can achieve results just because they understand it, not because we had to draw a big map. And not because they said, you know, we have lots of processes whereby we can tell somebody if you'll just walk down this particular game trail from here to here as a process and your preclear get well. That's true. I had a little boy one time. I've had lots of little boys auditing, by the way, and doing a pretty good job of it. But a little boy recently was auditing an adult with opening procedure. And he brought the adult straight out of his fog, that's all. I mean, it was a very easy job of auditing. I don't know whether the little boy really understood this and was taking it straight out of his understanding that one of the highest aberrations is an inability to accept directions, fighting directions, resisting directions, or whether he had just listened to it right and was doing it right, but he was doing a bang-up job. Well, there is so much in Scientology today that can be done in that fashion that it gives an individual a rather comfortable feeling, which isn't quite warranted. You know, he's memorized the pattern of six steps to better beingness, and he processes a group like this, and there's several people in the group get a lot better, and psychosomatic disappears here and there, and he feels good about it. It gives him a very comfortable feeling. Well, why did it happen? Which one was the one that really would have done it of all these processes? What's he doing processing a rote process on a group? He ought to know his process well enough, understand it well enough, be able to look at the alertness of his group enough, know which way to go, what to do. Well, that would come out of his understanding processing rather than his understanding and memorizing procedure. So that's the hill we're trying to climb. Now, you ask, what happens at the end of this unit? What in the way of certification you look forward to? Well, this mock-up has of operational lineups has altered quite a bit. And you're going to get more at the end of this unit than you will ever believe you need in terms of credentials and so forth. We decided to drop a lead cannonball on top of the society rather than to keep hitting him with that feather. He only believes a cannonball. Now, as far as individual processing, individual co-auditing, I expect you will have enough interest within the group and as a member of this unit to patch up such things as colds and so forth that you see somebody coming down with, or he gets into a bumped car or something of the sort and feels a little foggy. Well, I expect you to give somebody a hand like that. But I'm not going to ask you to do, and I'm going to ask you not to do, any serious co-auditing of any kind here for the next 3 weeks or until further notice. No co-auditing. And them as process themselves, I don't lay down, I'm not going to be harsh about this. Not going to be tough about it at all. But all bets are off if you're processing yourself. This period. Because the only cases, and there weren't too many of them, very few of them, the only cases which didn't make satisfactory advance in the last three units were those cases which consistently self-processed. Now, you say that possibly has some great significance. It does. It means the guy unwinds and knocks in the head everything that's been done for him in groups and by individuals. By doing what? By one circuit set up to shuttle another circuit through another circuit or something. Well, you can do something for yourself on self-processing. You can, but the time to self-process is when you're out there about 8 miles with perfect visio and complete certainty. That's the time to self-process. And all of these people that were self-processing were down there at step 4 and 5. And we didn't catch up with the fact on the third unit. A couple of them were self-processing at war. Until it just became too mysterious. Case wasn't coming on the line. Got very mysterious, so I got very, very personal about it, and finally we got to fess up. Yeah, self-processing. Well, okay. Now, you can't just cut a guy off. He's long since been processing energy and living on it that he has been self-processing. It's kind of an appetite a fellow gets, you know, self-processing. He chews up ridges, you know, and digests them in some fashion. That's a fact. That's what he's doing. He's eating. He's eating energy deposits. And I don't care what he's trying to do, what he thinks he's trying to do. It boils down to the fact that he's removing the significances from masses of energy, which he is then going to imbibe. He'll absorb them, use them. It's a form of eating. It sounds rather silly, but you'll run into it on a pre-clear someday, and you'll find out he normally has trouble with food and so forth. He has other eating problems. This is really what self-processing amounts to. Now, you can't expect to just cut a fellow off. He's been self-processing for a long time. It's lots of fun and so on. We just can't cut him off at nothing. There's got to be some way that he gets some processing of some sort or another if you're going to cut off his self-processing. So there is. In a few days, we will have more tape recorders here than we can easily count. And we will throw some of the spare reels of processes and a tape recorder in one of the auditing rooms here, and an individual who just feels he's got to have some auditing and he can't find anybody to audit can have some of the best auditing that he can get anyway, sitting there on some reels, and he or six guys can go in there and turn it on. Now, that's fair enough, isn't it? If you find yourself sitting up until 2 o'clock in the morning processing out this and that and so forth, well, I just invite you to step into the room and turn the wheel. It's better processing. Of course, an individual processes, when he processes himself, from the top. He takes the lightest that's available. You see, and he just keeps skimming skim milk. He just keeps skimming a little bit off the top, skimming a little bit off the top. And I calculated one time from the number of aberrations which a person had that if an individual self-processed for 7 years, he would be as well off as though he had had good auditing for one day. It's just about a silly ratio of this character. People who self-process, as I say, are slap-happy on the subject of energy. And it's not actually advancing their cases an inch. The time to self-process, as I say, is when you can be about 8 miles out with complete certainty and full perception. And then the body feels a little bit funny or something of the sort, or you're getting a feedback circuit from some part of your anatomy, machinery, or something of the sort. Well, blow it up and put a new one in its place. That's the way to self-process. All right. You can actually, while your exterior eyes, grant sufficient beingness to a body to peg it all up and down the age band. You can take from it and give to it beingness, that's all, until it's in good communication or in bad communication or any way you want to fix it up. You'll find individuals have a tendency to hold themselves at an acceptable age level. With the processing and so forth when they're in this condition. But an individual that's self-processing is undoing what is being done for him. He can do more damage to himself by self-processing a couple of hours than an auditor can very easily patch up in another hour or two. As what he does is he starts caving things in on himself, and he doesn't ever finish him up. I'll tell you why this is. You know what an automatic letting go machine is? Well, I'll tell you one. It's a stove. You'll find more people sitting around in the valence of a stove, by the way. Why is this? It's because a stove is an automatic letting go machine. This individual has developed an enormous dependency on the environment to tell him when to let go. He doesn't tell himself. He gets to a point finally where he himself never lets go of anything. Why? It's because he has an automatic let-go machine. Something tells him when to let go. And if nothing tells him to let go, he doesn't. So this individual pulls in an engram and he processes it, you see? Then he pulls in another engram and he processes. Now he's got a hold of two. Now he pulls in another engram and he processes. He's got a hold of three now. Now he's got another one. What's he doing? He's operating as a grouper. The primary grouper in the bank is the letting go machine. See, it's automatic letting go. The individual himself never lets go. You'll notice in opening procedure on people, as you may be doing here soon, in a few weeks, you'll notice that sometimes you'll say, all right, now walk over and hold on to the corner of the chair. All right. Now tell yourself to let go and let go. And the fellow will simply stand there and go on holding on to the corner of the chair. And finally he'll say, there's something wrong here. I'm having a hard time. You say, well, tell yourself when to let go and then let go. All right, he says, I will now let go. Nothing happens. The machine has worked so long that even it's broken down. He can't get anything let go. He's always expected the table to let go of him. A child who has been severely burned expects the stove to tell him to beat him back. There's got to be a pain signal there, and so on. So an individual, when he's operating with self-auditing, he'll just keep on, and he'll expect something else to make the engrams let go. He won't ever let go. He'll just get more and more and more and more. And you'll say, I wonder where this preclear, what he's doing. His occlusion is getting worse and worse and worse. Well, he's hauling these things in front of him all the time, and he's not doing anything else with them. If you drill this individual thoroughly on just letting go of things, you'll get him up to a point finally where he will finally, on self-determination, let go of the corner of the table, and his hand will shake like he's been electric shocked. He'll get a terrific tremble in his hand. That's something new. He has forgotten how to let go. Well, this is similar. This is actually the basis, to a large degree, of the fives. Persistence. He persists. If anything can be said about a case level below four, it's that the individual persists in whatever he's doing. Well, he persists at the same survival pace, unfortunately. Persist without change is kind of his motto. It takes an auditor to boot him out of it, really. Now, so I say there'll be that provided on auditing. There are many simple processes which you will get in group processing that will seem rather idiotically simple sometimes. Well, don't protest too much if, when you're exteriorized and doing rather well, you find some of these processes awfully simple. Something very funny happens to an individual who is exteriorized. The best process to run on somebody exteriorized is straight wire. That's because all he has to do really is change his mind. That's his process. You get him to change his mind. Therefore, you ask him to do certain kinds of straight wire, and it changes his mind. And that is, in effect, 8C. That is 8C. It is really a design process for an exteriorized thetan. That it works on somebody who is still inside is merely because it is a rather light process to somebody who is still interiorized, and it'll, of course, embrace any case. But this is strange, isn't it, that it is the best process for somebody who is exteriorized. Real weird. All you're doing is calling things up so he can change his mind about them. Well, so the group processes we use are, to a marked degree, rather general. But because they are not entirely general, we will, in the morning, compose a small coaching group rather than the main group. In other words, there'll be occasionally two groups running, one a coaching group. And the only thing they will be doing is trying to achieve certainty on something. The only failure to benefit in group auditing, which we've discovered so far, is a failure to actually comprehend and obey the command given. It's communication breakdown. And don't think it's strange. Once in a while, you can get into one, and you start going through some of the processes we're going to give you, and you can move into an area that's just that easy. Reality itself, being agreement, is actually dependent upon the amount of havingness which one has or the amount of havingness which one has just lost. So unreality, you see, would be a change in pace, a change in quantity of havingness. Things get unreal. Did you ever lose something and have everything get terribly unreal to you immediately? Did you ever have somebody that you love very much leave you and everything seems sort of unreal and unhappy and unsharp for a while? Well, that's just loss of mass. Just a problem in mass. You can take mass away from anybody and make him feel unreal. We get into the problem of exteriorization. The only problem that a five has is he can't lose that much mass and still be real. See? So we move him out and everything is unreal to him. So he's not certain he's out. He's out all right. But he just doesn't know. And it's all foggy, or he doesn't seem like he is, and he moves back in again, and then things are more real to him. Problem in mass. So we have to remedy this problem in mass. Well, that problem in mass is one which has to be remedied occasionally on a coaching basis. And then in demonstration auditing, you'll get most of your exteriorization, which I will be giving you. All right, the units which have gone through before have generally done some evening work. I don't believe this is terribly effective. I believe that a little relaxation, a little bit of rest in the evening might prove a little bit better. So at least at the beginning here, we will knock this group off fairly early. Somewhere 5:36, whatever the schedule calls for, just as an experiment to see if you do advance a little bit better. See if that evening work was cutting in on the energy level of people too heavily. Personally, I think that get everything out of it, you ought to get out of it. You ought to be up till about 9:45 or 10:30. But we'll see how it works right here at first by knocking off the evening schedule, okay? All right, your basal metabolism would not seem to be something which came under our preview. But it is. You get somebody who isn't eating. Here's this body, you see, and it depends on getting so much energy. When it gets just so hungry, it starts eating up its own ridges. And then you get somebody to put out a little bit of energy, and it's like pouring air into a vacuum. It just disappears quick. Now, it isn't that the thetan requires food to have energy, but it's the fact that a fellow starts up the line, he doesn't produce enough energy fast enough to feed a body. He just isn't that expert. So what happens to somebody who is not eating? He starts pulling in, or he's not eating properly. He starts pulling in facsimiles and ridges on himself. In processing, the body itself, doing so much work on this, is actually shifting its energy rate of consumption. And so we have a problem in chemistry. We don't particularly want this problem, but we do have this problem. As long as an individual is uncertainly or poorly exteriorized and is in intimate contact with the body, and there are many communication lines strung up between him and the body, and he's got lots of ridges around, the body, underfed, starts to become a sort of a vacuum. And it pulls things in on it, and it develops pain, and the pain short circuits back to the individual, and then he feels uncomfortable, and his must take care of the body phobias start keying in, and his processing starts going haywire. Not because he, a thetan, needs energy, you understand, but the body is a body, and it's all geared up to run as an oxygen engine. 98.6 is what it runs at, and if you try to run a steam engine sometimes, without putting any fuel in its firebox, you'll find out that it doesn't run very long. Well, similarly, this happens to the body. Now, there's a meter in there, which when calibrated is fairly accurate on its tone. That's the EAR 400. And it's very accurate on a basal metabolism rate. If you want to know what your basal metabolism is, what you do is put the dial that's all the way to the left on that meter in there over to the theta symbol, theta scale. And without touching the hand grip, tune the meter to where it registers 400 on the top scale, way over, almost way over. And that meter is then in tune. See, you haven't got hold of the hand grip, you're just holding it there by its cord. And that's calibrating that meter with the ABC scale turned over to the theta and the thing calibrated at 400. You just turn this little dial over here until it calibrates at 400. Then you take hold of the electrode, a single-hand electrode, and you adjust the surge needle back to the black area. That's the right-hand dial. You adjust that back to the black area. And when it's resting there, not hitting either side, in other words, resting partly in between when that needle is, well, you take a deep breath and you let it out. And if that needle doesn't go over and hit the pin, thud. And if it doesn't do it the two or three times that you take a deep breath and let it out, then you better start thinking in terms of getting yourself something to eat. That's a more accurate basal metabolism test, by the way, than the huge basal metabolism instruments they use in hospitals. It actually can be calibrated. But if that thing only goes over there 5 gradients on that surge needle, only goes over 5, 10 gradients, or if it only goes over 2 or 3, you got no business, no business at all, taking auditing. That's a fact, because the auditing won't do you a bit of good. The only thing you'll do is chew up energy so that the body can take it in as a vacuum. Now, the funny part of it is that a person who has gotten up toward operating thetan can have his body in a starvation state the like of which you never saw and never notice it. He's out of its wavelength. He isn't operating exactly on the body wavelength all the time. And the meter there will read on his body as though it's no food or anything of the sort, and he's feeling wonderful and he's doing fine. You see, it's the communication line between the thetan and the body that's doing this. Now, the other thing is, occasionally you will feel that you're about ready to blow up or blow your brains out or something of the sort on one of these processes at night. You'll get sort of nervous or upset some way or another. This, again, is an energy problem. Too much energy has gone down the drain. Now, I am not telling you anything but experience here. And that problem of jitters, nightmares, so forth, is a problem in terms of thiamine chloride and calcium. That's all. Now, how much is a lot of thiamine chloride? 50 milligrams. Is that a lot? No, not really. A couple of hundred is quite a bit. 100 is a very reasonably large dose. But the funny part of thiamine chloride is after you take just so much of it, you'll start knocking the calcium out of your system. And it evidently needs calcium to go into effect. I made some tests on this recently. And after you've taken just so much, there's not enough other mineral to ally with, and you're just throwing it away. You might as well not be taking it at all. So you take some heavy dosages of calcium with it. And, of course, if you take calcium, you certainly better take some C, otherwise the calcium won't pack itself back into the system. That's about all there is to it. So calcium is normally handed out with C. It's quite cheap, really, calcium is. Thiamine chloride can be very expensive. But if you don't insist on some of the super brands like Squibs or something of the sort, it's not expensive. You kind of say to the fellow, well, you don't happen to have another brand. He'll bring you out one for $5 that's 100 tablets of 100 units apiece or something like that, and the Squibs was $9.75 or something. You're paying for the brand. Now, there are some processed vitamin tablets which are very balanced, like Catalin. There are a lot of these packages, Neutralite and that sort of thing. A questionable value, very questionable. The only thing you have to be interested in this, then, is the thiamine chloride, calcium, and, of course, with the calcium, some C. Kind of chew up your teeth, by the way, if you take too much B1 without taking any calcium. Okay.